Well, good morning. My name is Rusty. I'm one of the pastors here, and it is really great to be here with you this morning. I know some of you might be new here this morning, so I really just want to say welcome. I'm so glad that you're here. I also wanted to say thanks for taking the risk and joining us today. I know that sometimes it can be a little nerve-wracking when you're walking into a brand new place, and so I just want to say thanks and really appreciate you being here. And really, you've picked a great weekend to be here because we are kicking off a brand new sermon series called I Want a New Marriage. And so let me just ask you guys, how many of you want a new marriage? Men, if you just raised your hands, that is the wrong answer, okay? This is an IQ test and you just failed, all right? Seriously. But around here, you know, we completely understand that marriage is a challenge. That marriages can be difficult. And really, the only people who say otherwise are single, right? I mean, it's totally true. And so this is probably one of the most difficult topics that we actually are really going to be able to deal with. Especially because of all the messages that we've been influenced by ever since we were just a little kid. All the things that we've learned, all the things that we've heard, all the things that we've been taught ever since we were just a small kid. We've been influenced by these things. And they don't all have to do with marriage, right? No. Let me throw out a jingle, see if you guys can help me out here, right? Try to help me out here. Try to finish this for me. 588-2300. Yeah, see what I'm saying? I mean, when you came in here, you weren't thinking empire, but all of a sudden now you're thinking empire, right? How about this one? You know, every kiss begins with... Yeah, see? And you see, these things, they're in our minds, but when they get triggered, they start to come out. How about this one? You know, I wish I were an Oscar Mayer... Really? I just thought I was trying to get you guys to actually say that. But these messages are in there, and all they need to do is be triggered. And we'll see that throughout our marriages, that we've been influenced by all of these outside sources, but all it takes is for them to just be triggered. And so this morning, I want to start off by saying, you know what, here's the deal. If you're here and you're single, I just want to say welcome and thanks so much for coming. Because I really just think that your decision to come just means that you're basically really smart, honestly. Because, I mean, you could have easily avoided this series. You could have easily avoided this series. But why not save a marriage before it starts, right? I mean, why not try to have all the plans and the principles in place for when that day does come? And so I just want to commend you on your decision. Way to go. Glad you're here. Maybe you're here this morning and you're married and, you know, things are going well. It's always good to have a refresher course, right? It is. And maybe, you know, you're here and things aren't going so well. Maybe they're a little rocky right now. Maybe you're just struggling, just hanging on right now. Here's our hope and our prayer for this series. That your marriages would be infused with love and life through this series. And that really over the next 4 weeks that we are going to be able to learn some new things. But really, regardless of where you're at on that scale, if you will stick with us over the next few weeks, I believe that there's going to be a lot of healing in this place. That if we are able to apply some of these principles, able to put some of these things into our heart, that we can see a lot of healing in our marriages around here where we could really help build a great foundation and platform for our marriage. And so here we go. We're just going to start right into this thing, okay? We're going to start off, but I want to see how we've been influenced ever since we were a little kid, all right? I mean, you guys probably remember, or maybe you don't, when you were 2 or 3 years old, right? I mean, your mom used to probably tuck you into bed, read you some fairy tale bedtime stories, you know? Maybe Cinderella and her prince, Sleeping Beauty, right? I mean, even the guys know about this stuff, right? And then the girls, you know, you guys got a little bit older, and you started having, you know, birthday presents and Christmas presents, and you'd go in there and you'd unwrap these things, and what was in there? Barbie dolls. There were Barbie, there was Ken and Barbie, right? And so you would play house and you go in your room and everything was perfect. I mean, it was like kissy, 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 right? Everything was good. And then maybe your little brother actually did recon missions with these G.I. Joes to kill Barbie, right? But regardless, I mean, ever since you were a little girl, you've had these influences on what love should be. And you thought how love should be actually be formed. And then maybe you got a little bit older and you started to recognize, you know, the magazines in the grocery store aisles, right? You started to recognize some of the tabloids on there. 10 ways to be sexy in 2 days, you know? Ways in which to get your woman to do what you want. Ways to drive your man wild. Actually bought that one for my wife. Best $5 I ever invested in my life, I can tell you that. And see, then you guys probably remember, right? When we were teenagers, we started listening to love songs. We started listening to Bryan Adams, Michael Bolton. Admit it, don't even lie. I mean, you know it's true. Everything I do, you see, it's disgusting. It really is disgusting. And then there's holidays, right? And there's love novels, and then there's movies like The Notebook. Oh my gosh, I hate that movie. Sleepless in Seattle, Titanic, right? You guys all remember when Rose was standing at the front of the ship and she was like, Jack, I'm flying, right? And you guys are watching that and you're like, oh, this is so romantic. It's precious. That is not reality. Seriously. I mean, reality is more like, you know, when at the end of the movie, Rose is holding on to the door and she's got Jack in her other arm, you know, and she's like, Jack, I'll never let you go. I'll never let you go. Oops, I let you go, you know? She does, but that is more reality. And I think that, you know, in our marriages, we've all been confronted with this, that it's really been one big wake-up call. That it's not necessarily everything that we thought it was going to be, that we thought it was going to be one way. But it turned out to be something so different. And so here's what I want to do. For the rest of this series, here's what I want to do, especially for this message. I want to lay a foundation. I want to lay a backdrop to what our marriages are like, what they could be. And honestly, I swear, I'm not trying to depress anyone through any of these things. But I'm just trying to paint some reality strokes of what every single one of us goes through in our marriages. And so perhaps through this process, we will also be able to find a few things out about ourselves as well. And so here's the first thing I want you to write down. We're going to start out with marriage 101, okay? Marriage 101, and then we're going to move into marriage myths. Here's the first thing I want you guys to write down. Marriage begins with a lot of dreams. I mean, we go into it with marriage with hopes. We go into marriage with ideas. We go into marriage with all these wishes of what it's going to be like, right? And I did the exact same thing. I had this dream, this picture of what marriage was going to be. I was going to wake up in the morning with my beautiful bride and we were going to have coffee, you know, and we're going to hold hands and I was going to pray, you know, before we started our day. And then I was going to go off to work, you know, and she was going to stay home and make sure that the house was all taken care of. And then we were going to have kids, right? And so when I got home from work, the kids would just run into my arms and they'd give me all these kisses and I'd see my wife pass there. And she'd have pearls on, you know? And in my dreams, I'd actually be able to afford those pearls, right? Really. And so she'd be there, and then we'd have a candlelit dinner. Even with the kids, I don't care. We're always having candles, right? And so we'd have a candle, and then we'd retire into the family room. And we'd have board game night. But we didn't want to play just any ordinary game. We wanted to play Monopoly. Because that one actually lasts longer than every other type of game out there, you know? And then we'd be done with that game. And then we'd go and finish our family project out in the woodshed. We were of carving out our very own dining room table just for us. You know, we just do that. And then we put the kids to bed. We tuck them in, read them a bedtime story. And then what? Business time, right? Mommy and daddy, here we go. Hours. And it's always passionate every single time. You know, it was going to be great. And then we were going to snuggle and just giggle into the wee hours and then just do it all over again. And that's exactly the way that it was going to be. But life is not like that, right? We have these wishes, these wants, and these desires. And every single one of us come into marriage with this picture of what life is going to be, this dream, these wishes of what life is going to dream. And the problem is that these wishes and these dreams and these hopes quickly turn into, number two, expectations. They turn into expectations where I no longer hope that my wife, you know, cleans the house. I now expect her to clean the house. I expect her to have food on the table when I get home. I expect her to focus on the kids. Why? Because that's what my mama did, right? And so the same exact thing happens on the other side, that she expects me to help around the house. She expects me to help fold laundry. She expects me to be able to have a budget and really keep our family financially sound. She expects me, right? Why? Because that's what her daddy did, right? And so we come into marriage with all these dreams and these hopes and these wishes, and they can quickly turn into expectations. A few weeks ago, this happened to me. This very thing. It was just a few weeks ago. I got here on a Sunday morning, and you know, we set up church at like 7:30 in the morning, and so we get here and we're setting up, and I'm like, oh, I forgot. I've got to set. I forgot something at home that I need, you know. But thankfully, I know that my wife is at home, and so I can call her. I mean, all she has to do is get three kids, five and under, dressed and fed and bathed and strapped in car seats, and that means she's really got nothing to do, right? And so I can call her anytime I want, you know. And so I call her up, and it rings, and it rings, and it rings. No answer. And so I'm hoping that she's going to answer this phone, but she's not answering this phone. I mean, if I pay the bill, answer the phone, right? Come on. I'd hope you would. And so I call her up again and again, and I call her like five times. She doesn't answer the phone. And so quickly, here's what happens. My hope, my dream that she's going to answer this phone quickly turns into expectations. I now say, you know what, here's the deal. If I pay the stinking bill, you need to answer the stinking phone, right? And see, when our hopes and our dreams turn into expectations, here's the third part of Marriage 101. It is impossible to give or receive love in the midst of those expectations. See, if I'm doing something for you and you expect that of me, there's no love in that. And see, if my wife is doing something for me that I expect of her, there's no love in that. But see, we all do this, and we do it, but we do it out of obligation. And we can't really do it with a heart of showing that I love you, because there's all of these expectations that are out there. And see, the reality is that there's many of us, that's where we're at right now. That we're existing, right? That maybe we're living together, but there's not a whole lot of love that's being evidenced because of all of these expectations that we have in our marriage. And so here's the deal. If we want to be able to answer the question, how do I get love back in my marriage? How many of you guys want to answer that question? If we want to be able to answer that question, we need to stop expecting so much. We need to stop expecting, to actually start loving more and doing things and not expecting our spouse or our partner to always have to do these things for us. Here's what I want to do. In order to really process through what that really means, I want to take us through the first three myths, all right? I want to take us through a few marriage myths in order to really get exactly what that means. And so hopefully we can begin to learn how to change after seeing these. Here's myth one. Myth one is this, that marriage changes people. That's the myth. And see, the reason why this myth exists is because we see what life used to be like before we were married, right? It was like, oh, he was so romantic. He used to call me in the middle of the day for just no reason at all, you know? And we'd go on dates and we'd have fun, right? We'd laugh. I mean, I actually thought my husband was funny before we got married, you know? Really. You know, here's the deal. He's thinking the exact same thing about you. Yes. He's thinking, here's the thing, you know, she used to be so romantic, you know? I mean, we used to make out all the time. Now she doesn't even want to kiss me, right? And so we get into marriage and we get this idea that marriage changes people, but marriage doesn't change people. Here's the truth. The truth is that marriage reveals what's already inside of us. It reveals what's already in there. See, up until marriage, let's be honest, I mean, life was relatively speaking, I mean, life was pretty stress-free, you know? I mean, of course it was fun and all of that. We didn't have anything to do. We had no responsibility, right? I mean, my biggest and toughest task was remember to say, you know, would you like fries with that? I mean, seriously, I mean, that's all I really had to do. And so we get married and all of a sudden, you know, we have this life of stress that we never even knew existed. Because all of a sudden, you know, you have to provide for a family. That you have to pay bills, that you have all of this stress that is coming upon you. Maybe there's even kids in the picture, right? Let me tell you, kids add stress. If you're single, write that down. I'm serious. It's true. Kids add a lot of stress. I mean, don't you love just hanging out with some people that don't have kids? I mean, you know, they're hanging out and they're like, yeah, dude, we have all this fun. And, you know, when we actually have kids, we're going to have like 8 kids, you know? And all you married guys, you're looking at them and you're like, yeah. And you smile because you don't want to be rude. And so you smile and you're like, you go for that, right? It's all you. And see, because when you get married, you know, see, all of a sudden these stresses come into our life. We get pressure You know what pressure does? Pressure begins to reveal what's already inside of us. It begins to push out those character traits that we didn't even know were already in there. It begins to push all of those out. And so now, you know, we're saying, oh, she's not passionate anymore. No, that's not true. Before marriage, life was carefree. It wasn't difficult. I mean, she could do whatever she wanted. But now marriage puts this pressure on us. It starts to reveal what's really inside of there. It starts to push out some character traits that we didn't know was in there. It starts to push out pride. It starts to push out anger. It starts to push out selfishness. And see, when these things come out, we don't understand where they're coming from. And so what do? We blame everyone and everything else, right? We say, oh, if it wasn't for you, or if it wasn't for this job, you know, then we could have this great, great marriage. But see, the reality is those things are just pushing out what's already inside of each and every single one of us. And you know what? That is a tough wake-up call for anybody. It really is. It really is a tough call. Marriage doesn't change people. It simply reveals what's already in there. It makes us confront our own immaturity. It makes us deal with our own character issues. But if we will choose to grow, we can absolutely become formed in the image of Christ. If we will choose to grow. So myth number one is that marriage changes people. The truth is that marriage doesn't change people. It simply reveals what's already inside of us. Myth number two, here it is. Myth number two says the grass is greener on the other side. And if your marriage is going through a rough patch right now, this might be where you're at. You know, if only I hadn't married him, you know? If only we made this much money, right? If only we lived in this city. If only I had, you know, less kids. If only I had more kids. If only I had no kids. Then our marriage would be different. And see, the reason it is so easy for us to buy into that myth, the reason it's so easy for us to lose satisfaction in our marriages is because we expect too much from it. We expect that the person that we're married to is to almost fulfill the role of God in our life, where we want them to provide our security for us. We want them to give us our value. We want them to give us our worth. We want them to give us all that comes complete us. But the truth is that there's only no human being can do that. Only God can do that in our lives. And yet we try all the time. I've got a laptop computer at home. It's a Dell laptop computer. Works great. You know, it really does. I can do Word docs on there. We can certainly surf the web. My wife can spend hours upon hours upon hours on Facebook. You know, she can do that. I can respond to emails from wealthy Nigerians who want to give me money. Just require a little transaction, whatever. But it works great, you know, it really does. But you know what it doesn't work great for? Video editing. It's terrible. It is absolutely terrible at video editing. Why? Because it doesn't have the power to do that. Because it was never built to do that. And see, I've had to learn not to use that particular computer for video editing because I cannot expect something out of it that it was never meant to do, right? It will absolutely leave me frustrated. And yet we do that all the time, doing that very same thing in marriage all the time, that we expect so much out of it. And so the myth is that the grass is greener on the other side. The truth is that the grass is greener where you water it. It's greener where you water it. And so let me ask you a question. What are you doing to water your marriage? And so maybe you're going through a little tough time right now. Maybe things aren't great. Are you willing to get counseling? Oh, you know, that's just not for me. You know, I'm not really the counseling type of guy, right? What are you doing to water your marriage? Are you proactively scheduling date nights for just you and her? Are we doing that? Are we reading marriage books or maybe audio books for the guys, right? Whatever. What are we doing to water our marriage? What are we doing to pour into our marriage? See, I think there's a temptation out there for a lot of us guys, myself included, okay? And that is, you know, when we start thinking about this question of what are we doing to water our marriage, you know, we start thinking about that, we're like, all right, I got it. Quick fix, here we go. Let's do this. We need to get a romantic date night every month. And so we schedule it on the calendar, you know, and we get it on there. Or, you know what, I got it. You know, we need to go on a vacation, 2-week vacation to the Bahamas. Just you and me, baby. Let's rekindle the fire, you know? And see, there's nothing wrong with that. There's no problem with that. All of those things are great, but that in and of itself is a myth as well. That there's actually a quick fix to this, because there's not. See, the reality is the best thing that we can do for our marriage is learn how to water it each and every single day. With things that, you know, might seem trivial, but they're not. Because they're connecting us together, you know? And so maybe it's, you know, the phone call in the middle of the day that says, you know, I didn't really have to talk about anything, just want to see how you're doing, you know? Now, obviously, I'm talking to you guys about that one, because gals, you do that anyway, you know? You'll like call up and be like, hey, what you doing? And we're like, working, you know? I don't know what else to say. Right? And so that's just for the dudes. Maybe this other one here, you know, when you're on your way home and you just call up your spouse and you say, you know what, I'm on my way home. Is there anything I can pick up? Or maybe when you get home and you see your spouse in there and they're making dinner or whatever, and you kind of just roll your sleeves up, throw all your stuff to the side, and you say, you know what, let me just jump in here. Let me help out. What can I do, right? And see, these little things may seem trivial, but they're absolutely not. They're absolutely not. It's what we've got to do. And honestly, I find it difficult. I do, because that's just not me. I'm always saying I got ADD all over the place. And so I don't really think about just one thing very much. And so all of these thoughts are just going through my mind. And so it's really tough for me to hone in on that. But yes, that is exactly what we have to do to help water our marriage on a regular basis. And I know that those things seem little. But it's the little things, guys, that open up the bigger doors of communication and intimacy in our lives. Those little things are what's going to help do that. And so the myth is that the grass is greener on the other side, but the truth is that the grass is greener where you water it. Here's the third one. Here's the third myth, that love is a lot of work. Love is a lot of work. It's tough. It's demanding, right? It's not easy. Yes, it is. Love is easy. Let me prove it to you guys. Let me prove it. Raise your hands here. How many of you guys have fallen in love at least once in your life? How many? Come on, throw them up. Some of you are like teenagers and you don't want to say it because you're sitting next to mama, right? And you just don't want to tell her that you've fallen in love. Of course, it's easy, right? Love is easy. I mean, nobody had to convince me. Nobody had to train me to fall in love. I simply did it all by myself when I was in second grade. I did. Cindy Brady from the Brady Bunch. Smoking hot. And then in third grade, I upgraded to Wonder Woman and Daisy Duke, just letting you know. But it was great. You know, nobody had to train me. Nobody had to convince me, right? No. Let me ask you guys another. How many of you guys are pet lovers in the room? How many of you guys are pet lovers? Yeah? How many of you guys last Christmas bought a Christmas gift for your pet? How many? Come on. Don't be shy. Yeah. See? It's easy. By the way, if you bought a Christmas gift for your cat, the Bible actually calls that sin because they're demonic creatures. Just want to let you know that. But love is not hard. Love is easy, right? Which is why on our wedding day, we can stand there with our beautiful bride and we can get all emotional and teary-eyed and all of that. And we can recite those vows like they're nothing. You know, for better or for worse, baby, me and you, for richer or for poorer, right? Till death do us part. That is not hard. That is easy stuff. And yet we think that love is hard. And so the myth is that love is hard. But the truth is that staying in love is hard. Staying in love is a lot of work. And I almost go so far as to say that it's nearly impossible. But you know what's interesting? Is that I might say that it's nearly impossible, that there's something inside of every single one of us that wants to make it happen. Right? There's something inside of every single one of us that wants to believe, that wants to have that special someone that we can spend the rest of our life with, where it doesn't matter how dysfunctional our past has been. It doesn't matter, you know, how many relationships we've been in. It doesn't matter all the stats I can throw at you. It doesn't matter the stories I can throw at you, because something inside of us wants to push through that. Push through all those facts, all those stories, all those experiences, whatever. Push through that and say, I still believe. And I believe that it is absolutely God who has put that desire inside of each and every single one of us. He's put that in us that we want to still believe, where it's not enough to simply have buddies that we play poker with, where it's not enough that we simply, you know, have golfing partners with, right? Where it's not enough to simply have girlfriends to go out and watch Twilight with, you know? Which, by the way, is another sin, just FYI. It's not enough to go and grab coffee with someone. It's not enough. Because there's something inside of every single one of us that says, I want a partner. I want a soulmate. And the good news is that it is possible. But it takes a whole lot of work. A lot of work. And so here's what I want to do. I want to look. There's really only one place. I mean, there's a number of places. But the one place that I know that really gives us the best practical information on and wisdom about love and relationships is the Word of God. And so I want to go to the Word of God right now, and I want to start looking at two sections of Scripture, all right? Two sections of Scripture, one with Jesus and the other one with the Apostle Paul, because I think there's a lot of things that we can learn and truly develop, how we can truly develop a foundation of love in our relationships. And so here we go. Let me just give us a little backdrop to this, okay? Let me just throw out a little backdrop here. Jesus is hanging out with his disciples. He's walking around with his buddies, you know, and he says, okay, here's the deal. I've got a new commandment for you. And they're like, oh, a new commandment? He says, yeah, I got a new commandment. And so I can just envision what happened, you know. All the disciples, they bust out their laptops and they say, all right, Jesus, here we go, right? And they're like, talk slow, Jesus, okay, because this is a new commandment. We're excited, right? I mean, we know the other 10 commandments. We know all about that stuff. But I want to know this new commandment. Jesus says this in John 13, 34. Here's what he says. He says, so now I am giving you a new commandment. Love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. And so I'm guessing that the disciples, you know, kind of looked around and were like, maybe even closed their laptop a little bit, you know, and they're like, Jesus? Kind of heard that one before, you know? Doesn't really sound like it's all that new of a commandment, right? I mean, I thought you said this was going to be a new commandment, you know? And so I'm sure there's probably some dialogue, maybe a little bit of interaction that was going on because they needed some explanation. Because here's the deal. What Jesus just said was revolutionary in that culture. It was absolutely revolutionary in that culture because what he was saying was, hey, you know what? Here's this new commandment. I want you to love like I have. When I say love each other, what I really mean is I want you to take love to a whole nother level. I do. I want you to take love from something that's like a noun, you know, where it's just I love pizza, I love movies, I love my dog, you know, whatever. And I want you to change that. Jesus said, I want you to change all. He said, that's great that you do that, but I want you to make love proactive. I want you to take it from this noun thought process where it's just like, you know, I love something, and I want you to change it into a verb where you actually do something. With the same way that I have loved you, I want you to love others. I mean, you've seen the way that I love you, right? I mean, you've seen the way that I serve you. You've seen the way that I go out of my way for you. That's how I want you to love others. I don't want you to love the way your ex-husband or your ex-wife loved you. I don't want you to love the way that your absentee father loved you. I don't want you to love the way that your grandmother loved you. I want you to love the way that I have loved you, which was a love of action. It's not a noun, it's a verb. And what's interesting is right at that point, Jesus just basically shuts up. He does. He doesn't really say anything more on the subject. He just kind of leaves them hanging. You know, he doesn't give any explanation. He doesn't give any illustrations, nothing. He just kind of shuts up and he just leaves them hanging right there. And actually throughout the rest of his ministry, he really doesn't talk too much about this type of love ever again. And so a number of years later, we're privy to another guy by the name of the Apostle Paul, and he wrote a lot of the books of the Bible in the New Testament, and he comes on the scene, and he decides that he's going to tackle this very subject as well, all right? And so he starts to write very practically on this matter. He gives us tangible action steps for which we are able to apply in the context of our marriages, all right? And so we're going to look through very quickly Philippians, or we're going to look through Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 through 8. We're going to take it verse by verse, okay? So here's what he says. He says this, Philippians 2, 3. He says, don't be selfish. Now, why do you think he said that? Because he absolutely knows human nature is to be selfish, right? I'm in a network of pastors that meet from around the States. And we typically meet about once a month in California. And so, you know, we get together and strategize. I get to learn from a lot of these guys as well. And so I'm sitting there in the airplane terminal waiting for my plane, you know. You guys all know how it is, especially with the, you know, cattle drive airline, otherwise known as Southwest, right? Absolutely. And so you know how it is. You know, when they start calling off sections of seating, who do they always call first? First class? Okay, first class, whatever. Anyway, whatever. They always call first class in a number of different airlines, whatever. And so in Southwest, they also call, you know, A1 through 30 or A31 through 60 or whatever. And so, you know, I always seem to forget that I need to, like, check in like a week in advance or whatever, you know. And so I'm always in section B5000, okay. And so I'm all the way in the back of the plane. And so I'm sitting there and I'm just kind of people watching. I'm watching all these people as they're coming up and whatnot, and I just start seeing people just blatantly start cutting in line. They do. They're just cutting in line. I mean, you've probably seen some of the maneuvers that people do. There's this one dude, you know, he was kind of just walking up, but he was doing the phone maneuver, okay? And so he's on the phone, and he's kind of moving his luggage here and there, you know, and whatnot, and he's acting like he doesn't really know what's happening, and then he just kind of juts in, right? You guys ever seen those kind of people? Yeah, but no one's going to interrupt him because he's on the phone, right? Yeah. And another dude I saw, he was actually looking down and he did the look away move, you know, where he's just kind of looking down, driving his luggage, whatever. Maybe he's looking at Burger King over there, reading a book, something like that. And he does the exact same thing. He just kind of cuts right in there. But everybody's just like, oh, he's not really doing anything. I mean, what are you going to do? Interrupt the guy? I mean, no, of course not. You know, he doesn't really know what's going on. And so I'm sitting there and I'm standing there. I'm wondering, you know, why in the world are these people cutting in line? I mean, we're all going to the same place. I never really figured that out, right? Until this last time, I finally figured that out. I did. Now, I told you that I'm not really the sharpest tool in the shed, and so it took me like, you know, 32 years to figure this out. Kind of dumb that way, but whatever. And so I finally figured out, you know how I figured it out? I finally figured out that they actually want a place to put their luggage in the airplane, right? That's why they're cutting in line. And so I figured that out. Why? Because I did not have a place to put my luggage in the airplane, okay? And so I get on the plane, and I'm looking, I'm like bin to bin to bin to bin, right? Until I finally find one, which is like on the other side of where my seat is, you know? Especially in Southwest, it's kind of, again, cattle herding, and you just sit wherever in the world you can, you know? And so I had to sit in the middle of these two people who were just smiling away, and I knew that they were not going to shut up for the entire plane ride, right? And so I'm sitting there, and I'm like, man, this is going to be horrible. But do you know what I realized? I realize that it's all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me, 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 me. It's all about, you know, my place in line, right? It's all about, you know, am I going to be able to put my luggage in a place? It's all about where am I going to be able to sit, you know? And we take that same mentality and we apply it in our marriages as well. And Paul says, don't be selfish. He says, don't be selfish. Then he continues on in Philippians 2:3 and he says this. He says, don't try to impress others. Don't try to live one-upping one another. Marriage is not a competition. It is a partnership. Then he continues on in that very same verse. And he says something that will literally revolutionize our marriages if we will choose to do it. If we will choose to do it, it will absolutely revolutionize our marriage. Philippians 2:3, it says, be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Folks, that is a game changer. What if we would humble ourselves and learn to think of others as better than ourselves? I mean, we all know how to do this, right? Let me ask you a question. How many of you have been in an environment where you were not the most important person in the room? How many? Quite a few, right? Maybe for those of you who didn't raise your hand, let me just throw this out there. Let me just help us out here. If you've ever been to a wedding and you were not the bride, you were not the most important person in the room, okay? Seriously, you weren't. I mean, you go to a wedding, right? And the usher says, hey, come here, right over here, you know, and he finds a seat way in the back, whatever, and he says, sit down, you know, bride's coming, you're late, whatever. You know, you walk in, nobody gets up. Nobody turns their head at you. No. But the bride comes in. What happens? Music starts playing. It's like, da-na-na-na, you know, or whatever music you want to play, whatever. Really, I mean, this stuff starts happening, and then everybody, you know, she walks in, and everybody stands. Why? Because she's the most important person in the room. And so we all know how to treat someone as if they're more important than us, but it's actually very difficult to do. You know, we don't interrupt them, right? We don't interrupt. We don't correct their stories. We don't make them feel stupid. We defer to them. We say, you know what? You're going to get all of the attention. And so we know how to do this because we do this in different environments. But it's just really hard to do in our marriages. And so maybe some of you are thinking right now, hey, well, Rusty, you know, are you really trying to tell me that Paul is saying that we are supposed to act like our spouse is more important than us? Is that what you're really trying to tell me? Yep, I am. I really am. And it's typically where, you know, we can start getting all defensive, right? When we go to like DEFCON 9, right? And we just have all these walls just go up immediately, right? Because we're like, no, hold on, no. No, no, no. My husband, you know, no. My wife, my fiance is not more important than I am. I mean, in God's eyes, we are all on the same playing field, right? I mean, I think the Declaration of Independence even says that, you know, we are all created equal. And so Paul is saying, yeah, that's cool. If you want a roommate, he's saying that's cool. If you want a business partner, if you want a friend, that's cool, absolutely. But if you want to spend the rest of your life with someone, you've got to make the choice to act or see them as more important than yourselves. Where the question or the decision is not, is this person more valuable than me? No. The decision or the choice needs to be, am I willing to treat them as if they're more valuable than me? That's the decision that we can make. And if we make that, it's a game changer. It will absolutely change the game. Paul goes on with his thoughts and he says this, Philippians 2:4. He says, don't look out for only your own interest, but take an interest in others too. And you know, this is tough. This is tough for me because it's saying, Rusty, you know, don't be consumed with only what interests you. Be consumed with what your wife is interested in as well. He's saying, you know, you need to take interest in what your wife likes. But here's the problem. The problem is I'm interested in what interests me. And I'm not interested in what's not interesting to me, right? Absolutely. And so Paul says you need to find interest in that person that you're married to, and it's not easy. Because my wife is interested in romantic chick flicks, okay? I've told you guys this before. There's two types of movies in the world. There's chick flicks, and then there's good flicks, you know? I mean, that's just how it is, really. You know, it makes it tough. And then, you know, she's interested in health food. I like In-N-Out burgers, you know? She's interested in gym memberships, right? She's interested in, basically, I just figured out she's interested in anything that costs money, okay? This is just how it is. And so I'm not interested in that. But Paul says, find interest in what your spouse finds interesting. And then he gives us the theological reasons for all of the statements that he just says. He tells us this is why. Here's what it is. Philippians 2:5, he says, you must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. And in our relationship with Christ, he doesn't draw lines. He doesn't say, you know, if you don't, then I won't. You know, he doesn't say, if you will, then I will. No. He says, I love you no matter what. And I died for you regardless. I gave my life for you. Paul goes on, he says, though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. And I love this because Paul is saying that he never used the God card. He never did. I mean, he never walked into a restaurant and said, hey, Mater D, you know what? See that table over there? You need to clear those dudes out. Seriously, because I'm Jesus, okay? No, you don't understand. I'm Jesus. I'm J-E-S-U-S. You know, I'm Jesus. Clear that dude out, all right? He didn't do that. He didn't use the God card. He didn't push the God button. And see, what would happen if we didn't do that if we did that in our own house? Where men, maybe we stopped using the I'm the man of the house button. Ladies, maybe you stopped using, you know, I'm the queen bee button. What could that do for our marriages? It says, instead, he gave up his divine privilege. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. When he appeared in human form, he humbled himself. Guys, he was proactive. Nobody forced him. He did it all on his own. He did it by himself. And see, men, we cannot force our wives. Ladies, you cannot force your husbands, but you can make the decision for yourself on, is my love going to be a verb? Am I going to humble myself? Am I going to submit to my spouse's wishes and wants and desires? Not because I'm expected to, but because I want to. It says, in obedience to God, Christ died a criminal's death on the cross. Guys, that's how much we are supposed to love our spouse. With that much. And it's not easy. I understand that. But that is what Christ is calling us to. Here's our memory verse for this series. It's Ephesians 5:21. Oftentimes, this verse is typically skipped over in weddings. They normally start with wives submit to your husbands, and then husbands be submissive to your wives, right? Well, they always leave this one out. It says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Guys, God is calling us to submit to one another, and we can do this. And I promise you that if you do, it will revolutionize your marriage. Will you pray with me?